Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for visiting our sponsors and supporters. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
Very good. Well, so we're going to start off on the wrong foot. Pat, you have an update for us.
I do. I have a Fannie Willis update. Now, this has been dragging out for a while, so for those of you that may need a reminder who Fannie Willis is, she's the district attorney in Fulton County, Atlanta, Georgia, who filed a RICO case against Trump and about 17 other people. And she put her boyfriend in charge of the case. She was sleeping with the boyfriend. She paid him almost, $750,000, and then the two of them were going on vacations that he financed.
Something like three times the salary of anybody else on
right,
the case?
Right, right, yeah. Including one of the assistants who wrote a book on RICO. He's considered an expert on RICO. At any rate, the thing blew up on him, and they appealed on the grounds that she should be evicted from the case because of ethical issues. And so she appealed that ejection to the Georgia Supreme Court, and they finally, it took them all these months, but they finally decided that they would refuse to hear her appeal.
Yay.
So Supreme Courts have the right, just like our U.S. Supreme Court, have the right to refuse to hear appeals, and there's nowhere else to go. When they refuse you, you're done.
No reconsideration.
Right. So she can't get back in that case, so the case will be... There's a Georgia Commission on Prosecutorial something other, forget the name of it. That case will go to them. They will reassign it to another district attorney in the state. And then they will decide whether or not to revive the case or dismiss it outright. And Bob and I were talking about this before we got on the radio. And he said, well, the other district attorney will just go on with it. And I pointed out that Jim Jordan was after Kim. She had been subpoenaed by his subcommittee for documents that she refused to turn over. And I said, well, if I was a district attorney, and they said, here's this case, and the feds are already after you.
With all this baggage.
Yeah, because you inherit that, too. So if you want to be drugged through the press and through the meat grinder by the feds while you're trying to reinstitute this pathetic RICO case with the 17 defendants.
Pat, would you explain to our audience what a RICO case is?
RICO is a case that's involved to go after a group of people who are racketeering, conspiring, to break the law in various ways. It includes money laundering, and it was designed to go after the mafia. Rudy Giuliani used RICO to gut the mafia.
And that Fannie Willis was going after Trump on a RICO charge. What was her charge against him?
Oh, she parsed the statute. Go ahead, Mary.
Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. That's what it stands for.
Thanks.
Okay, so against Trump, it included, what was her charge against him?
She parsed statements that he had made and tried to fit them in various places of the RICO statute.
Okay.
It was really,
it was a stretch.
I mean, she's probably saying that Trump conspired with the people that work for him.
To overturn the election, wasn't it about the election results?
Yeah, the Georgia results.
Yeah because Georgia. He
called the governor of Georgia, remember?
Brian Kemp.
And said, find me some votes.
Yeah.
So he's trying to intimidate the governor and da-da-da-da-da. That's what that was all about. That's what she hung it on. Now, the 17 other people, I don't know how she got them, unless they were just people that were working in his election campaign.
You know, and there's two sad parts about all this. You know, you can be charged on these false charges, and it turns out in the long run that you are able to defend yourself or it's overturned. But you can go broke. It could destroy you financially defending yourself from. So the actual act of going after somebody is the punishment,
whether they're
found guilty or not. You could be destroyed, like they did with General Flynn.
The feds do that all the time.
And the other sad part about it, wasn't she reelected this past in the fall?
Yeah, she was reelected.
I mean, in spite of all this that came out before it, the people in Atlanta, in her area, just felt like she was the best person they could get for a district attorney.
Well, the guy running against her.
It's a sad state of affairs.
No, the guy running against her was a really weak candidate.
Well, I couldn't.
It's also hate Trump. And
I'd rather have a weak candidate than a corrupt one.
Well, you're not
Fannie
a voter
Willis.
In Fulton County, then, are you?
Thank God I'm not.
But everybody there that hates Trump wanted to reelect her because they wanted her to continue going after Trump.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with Fulton County.
You're dealing with a majority black county and a black district attorney, a black female. And the guy running against her was black, but he had a really thin resume, and he had run for something before and lost. And losers don't have a good odor.
And here she was getting front page every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good or bad, it's still publicity.
Well, yeah, and think about the position she was couched in, which is the media and Trump and all the white people are going after this poor black woman, and we need to ride to her rescue. She had the best of all worlds, political worlds, right?
Mm.
At any who, she's out of that case, and we'll see. The article I was reading said they'd probably send it to a DA in a red county.
So he can
dismiss it outright.
Squash it. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would not want that can of worms because
the baggage is too much.
Yeah, because the cases that get turned over to the attorney general's office or to another district attorney are usually stinky cases that the original DA screwed up, and you don't want to fix it because that district attorney has to run for reelection in their county, not in her county, their county. So whatever that goes wrong with that case, now it's on them.
Yeah.
And so I think that case will probably get dismissed.
What were you going to say?
Now, do we want to move on to what was called Arctic Frost?
Let's talk about Arctic Frost. Talk about holding people accountable.
And let's define, because we were defining RICO, let's try to define Arctic Frost.
Arctic Frost started as an investigation of Trump and his election activity.
By who?
Jack Smith. By the FBI, and it involved Jack Smith when he was prosecuting Trump.
And we're assuming this was at the direction of
the FBI,
or
the Attorney General. Ray was in it. You know Biden was in it because this thing metastasized, and pretty soon it included 92 different Republican organizations, including Turning Point USA. In fact, one of the senators was on Fox the other night and said that Charlie, 2 years ago, had asked him for some help. He said it appears that we're being targeted by the federal government. So Arctic Frost was trying to wipe out all the Republican...
The conservative groups.
The National Committee, Republican National Committee. What have you got here?
I'm not fans of them either, so that would be okay.
The Republican Attorney General's Association, various Trump political groups, the Republican National Committee. Well, if you take out all of the party organizations, then you take out Trump's groups, what have you got left? You basically have denatured the Republican Party for the whole nation.
And if you go back a number of years, back to the Obama years, when the IRS was specifically targeting conservative groups.
The Tea Party.
And Tea Party,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They were threatening the Tea Party to lose their tax exemption.
Yeah, and slow walking any applications.
Right, right. So Arctic Frost is not new.
No, it's...
But it started with Trump and then just spread and spread and spread. And they're saying that this is going to be, of course, everybody says this will be bigger than Watergate.
Well, it is bigger than Watergate. The question is whether or not it will get the attention, the media attention, and the resolution that Watergate got.
Aha, but there's a twist. Florida is filing its own RICO case against the perpetrators of Arctic Frost. And they're filing it under a state statute. So that means no matter how long this federal case drags on for Arctic Frost or how long this investigation goes on, it will remain front and center because nobody at the federal government can dismiss Florida's case. They have their own RICO statute. And as far as discovery has gone, Senator Grassley, who's chairing the subcommittee and has all the federal documents for Arctic Frost, he's given them all to Florida. So where Florida wouldn't have been able to find these documents and get them on their own, they're getting a wealth of documents that they need for their RICO case. And so this is like Letitia James's strategy to get Trump on a state crime so he can't pardon himself as a federal power.
So what kind of big names are we talking about as being a perpetrator?
Well, it's going to involve a bunch of FBI agents. It involves the FBI, the Attorney General's office, the Biden's White House.
So we're talking Jim Comey and...
Probably.
Jack Smith.
Speaking of Jim Comey, his daughter is suing to get her job back.
Of course she is.
Yeah.
She's suing who?
She's suing Trump to get her job back.
She was fired without cause.
Well, she's an at-will employee, so they don't need to give her cause. So they very specifically did not give her cause, because now she can't argue about the cause. But she has supplied cause, saying this was a political hit job. But she's going to have to prove that.
And isn't there a lot going on, Pat, about in the courts really challenging Trump's authority as the chief executive of the executive branch to take actions that presidents have been taking for years?
Yes.
And firing people that used to come in.
Let me correct you. He is being pursued for exercising power that hasn't been exercised for years. Other presidents have not tested the limits of Article 1, and he is. For example, firing people at an independent executive agency.
Yeah.
So they're saying this has never been done. He's doing it because he's a dictator, and we need to go in and pull him in.
But years ago, it used to be common, and when a president came in, they would get rid of all the people that were working for the previous party. I'm talking about in the 1800s now.
No.
That was common. And they would bring in their own people.
Well, maybe in the 1800s.
That's what I'm talking about. Previously, I go back all the way.
Okay. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, thank you for listening to CCTA Wake Up Call.
Hi, my name's Elena Huber, and I'm running for your New Bern Ward 1 Alderman. As a retired military officer, I offer extensive experience to civic leadership. Years of managing complex operations under pressure make me adept at long-term planning and crisis response. I have led diverse teams through deployments, combat casualties, natural disasters, and the COVID-19 pandemic. My experience with large bureaucracies will help me navigate government systems and promote action from within. Whether it's a hurricane or budget shortfall, I have been trained to be calm in the storm, bringing order and clarity. With 22 years spent developing others and building teams, I am equipped to promote effective action, and I am ready to go to work. Please vote for me on Election Day, October 7th, and early voting begins on September 18th.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? People in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com and make your voice heard.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Pat, we want to do a quick correction.
Yeah, Mary caught me. I said Article 1. I meant Article 2 of the Constitution, which governs the powers of the executive. So Trump is insistent that he exercise complete power of the executive. So, for example, this Lisa Cook, who's at the Federal Reserve, he tried to fire her. Jeremy Powell, who he'd like to fire too, has refused to lock her out of her office. So she goes to work every day. She has access to her electronics. They're getting ready to vote to lower interest rates. So she's going to be allowed to vote on that. And considering she's got a chip on her shoulder about Trump, there's no telling how she's going to vote. But
Now, the firing of Lisa Cook is related to mortgage fraud, is it not?
Well, that's the cause they're using, because the statute that set up that Reserve Board said nobody can be fired except for cause.
And that is cause. Is it proven that she...
Well, it's never been in a court.
It's never been in court.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's probable cause to believe that fraud has...
Yeah, that's the allegation. She falsified the information indicating that... that her residence was, in fact, a part-time residence, and this allowed her to have special tax and financial
mortgage rate
benefits. And that, I mean, this is a person that's supposed to be, deciding the economy of the entire country. They need to be somebody you can trust. She's untrustworthy.
So is it going to come to trial? What is
everything
the status?
Comes to trial now. Name one thing that doesn't go.
What we're saying is the interim, between the time of the accusation and trial, she maintains her job as her.
According to Jeremy Powell, she does.
Okay.
He could change that, but he chooses not to.
He chooses not to because he's anti-Trump as well. Yeah.
She had loans on two primary residences, and there was a third issue
that came up too.
Yeah. Now we also need to remember that this is based on the Federal Reserve 1917, as opposed
13.
To our
13,
as opposed to our Constitution, which is 125 years older than that.
Yeah.
So what's your point?
Well, the powers of under the Article 2. The powers for the president, and here's an organization that was founded.
Well, Congress created it and put it in the executive branch. So Trump is exercising his power as the executive.
Yep.
Now, when they created it, they said you can't get rid of any of the governors except for cause. So when this mortgage fraud came up, they used that for cause, just like you would any other criminal case. So she sued saying there's no for cause.
Now,
and she was assigned a judge who was her sorority sister.
Oh, gads.
Who ruled in her favor. Duh. And so Trump appealed it, and the appeals court has upheld the ruling of the first court, the sorority sister. So he's going to have to go appeal it again to find out if he's going to be allowed to fire her.
And the irony, now, I'm going to...
Well, let me answer her question.
Okay.
So the case may be decided by the appeal. If the next court says, yeah, you can fire, he's going to fire. Then it's up to her to sue.
Okay.
But if she sues, the burden's going to be on her to prove she didn't commit mortgage fraud. Why would you do that?
Now, with committing mortgage fraud, could the banks call that mortgage due because of fraud?
Yes.
That would be nice.
They're not going to, but they could.
Yeah, they could. They could. Now we're gonna change hats. And last week we were recording the show, and we found out that Charlie Kirk had passed away from that.
Well, we found out he had been shot. We didn't know he was dead.
Yeah, and somewhere in the middle of the show, I think we found that out, but we didn't make any comments in the show. So I think we're gonna change hats to.
Yes. That whole thing and everything that has happened since The shooting of Charlie Kirk reminded me of the death of Princess Diana. You weren't dealing with someone who necessarily was in power, but you were dealing with someone who had a lot of people who loved and respected him. And he was way too young, and this shouldn't happen to anyone. And we're not used to political assassinations in America, and yet we've seen some. Recently, we saw President Trump. We saw the CEO of Health, what is it?
United Healthcare.
United Healthcare. And now we have Charlie Kirk. This is a very bad pattern.
I think I'm going to go to Gary Hamrick as a pastor up in Leesburg, Virginia. And he said, one of the things that we are experiencing now is firsthand seeing what's going on. Because we had the videos of Charlie Kirk being shot. We've had the videos of the attack on the United Healthcare. We've seen the videos of President Trump getting shot. We have seen these firsthand. We used to hear about this through the media at some delay, but now we are participants.
Well, the media used to have discretion not to show you the ugly details. If you remember how they treated FDR, they never showed his braces.
But, you know, and the thing is with this Charlie Kirk thing, it just brings out so clearly that there are people in this country who believe and support the idea of assassination as a way of dealing with your political opponents. They had a report.
They
took a poll. Over 50% of the left-leaning people in the country, let's talk about extreme Democrats, I guess, mostly, support the idea that assassination is justified and should be used, you know, when necessary or whatever. And this is really scary for our country. And it's not, and the people that say, well, it's the right. It's not the right. Look what happened after Charlie Kirk, which I think was a wonderful human being, a Christian, a family man, everything that you would want in someone that you can respect. And he was focusing on the youth in this country and trying to offset what happens in the universities, because most of the kids in universities get indoctrinated by all the leftist professors. But this was a situation where, you know, it was just totally, obviously not unnecessary, but it was really not something that you could count on as something that the right would ever do. And look what happened there with George Floyd. What happened? There were riots all over the country. They were burning down the cities. And George Floyd had a criminal history. He was no top-notch, you know, a
role
citizen.
Example.
Yeah, role example. And then along comes Charlie Kirk. But the right is responding, but not in a way of committing violence like the left does.
I want to talk about the legal case. They're going after the death penalty, and I'm assuming that our audience doesn't know a lot about how the death penalty works, so I wanted to explain that for a little bit. He's been charged with aggravated murder. That's a capital offense. Capital meaning death penalty case.
A life for a life.
Yes. And the reason it's aggravated is because when first you have a trial on the murder, so you prove the guy murdered the victim. Then you have a separate trial on aggravating and
evidence.
What makes this premeditated? Yeah.
No, not what's premeditated. No, what makes it aggravated murder? So you have aggravated circumstances. Thank you. Thank you, Pat. Turn the brain on. The ones that excuse his behavior. So you have both sides present evidence. Now, the statute for each state has a list of what it considers to be aggravating circumstances. And it's different from state to state. The Utah is using two aggravated circumstances. And I think the first one is that it's a political action. It's a political hit. And the second one is that he did it in the presence of a child.
A question I have is, I read yesterday that they are going to try to get him assessed for mental capacity.
Well, they do that in every case.
But if they say that he is mentally incapacitated, my understanding is if they're mentally affected, that the death penalty is off the table.
Probably. That would be up to the jury. Because the fact that he's mentally incapacitated would be an aggravating or a limiting circumstance that they would have to prove that he's mentally affected.
And here
But when I look at the text messages that he sent and the actions that he took, I don't see any evidence of mental illness or inability to plan, execute, try to get away. I mean, he was naive. Because according to the messages that he sent to his love, he thought he'd gotten away with it.
And talking about those tender notes.
Yes, the
and I don't think notes. He had any prior history of mental hospitalizations or mental health treatment.
No.
I mean, some of these cases, it's clearly a person's had an ongoing. That's different. But
now,
in a case like this, you could try to make a case of mental illness, but in my opinion, that doesn't forgive a thing.
There were also apparently some gaming internet sites where he had sort of proposed that this is what he was going to do. So other people were aware of his...
That's not one of the circumstances.
No. But I wouldn't call him mentally ill, but I would call him seriously deluded.
No.
How about evil?
No, it's evil, like
yeah,
he said.
How about evil?
When I was teaching criminal justice, I told my classes, I said, you are going to find out if you proceed in criminal justice that evil exists, that there's sometimes no explanation for this bad behavior, for people wanting to hurt other people other than evil.
I think he was brainwashed, too.
I think
we
do need to address that. There is a spiritual warfare going on in this country, and we need to acknowledge that. And Charlie was silenced for his voice and for proclaiming the truth. And I'm using the word they as a broad brush. They as an ideology who are afraid of the truth, and the truth of what Charlie was saying had such great impact on an upcoming age of voters and changing the direction of a lot of the college campus indoctrination back to God, back to family, back to morals. And the left couldn't handle it. So, and I think there was more people involved based on what Alan said in that video gaming site. It looks like, according to Cash Patel, there's more than 20 people that they're investigating.
Yeah, well, I wanted to finish the death penalty.
Okay, we're going to get back to that. I'm going to say we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Welcome back. Again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. So, Pat, you wanted to finish up on...
I wanted to finish the death penalty before I was so rudely interrupted.
Sorry.
Okay. So the state goes first because they're the ones asking for the death penalty. They on this separate trial, and they produce evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt the aggravating circumstances. In this case, it was done in front of a child and the political hit. Then the defense presents their evidence, and then the jury weighs the two. And if the aggravating circumstances outweigh the other circumstances, then they come to the decision for death penalty. It's up to the jury whether or not he gets the death penalty.
Do you know, is this a unanimous decision from that jury?
Yes. Yes, it has to be unanimous. And, of course, the defendant doesn't have to testify. And, of course, you put his mom on the stand, and she, I learned how to cross-examine moms. You ask them, you're his mother, aren't you? Yes. You don't want anything bad to happen to your child, do you? No. Pass the witness. But at any rate, that's how the term that we use in criminal justice is called proportionality. And when I used to teach it in criminal justice class, I used to show my class a song from one of the light operettas, Let the Punishment Fit the Crime, Gilbert and Sullivan. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're looking for, let the punishment fit the crime. And in this case, we who are biblically based believe in a life for a life.
I think that was the Mikado.
It is. Thank you. Right out of my head. I'm thinking of Shogun.
We're gonna go in a totally different direction.
Surprise, surprise.
We have added Manny Ruiz to our group here. Manny is running for alderman in District 5, and we are not allowed to endorse candidates, but we invite any candidate who would like to come on the show. If you would like to be on the show, regardless of where you are on the political spectrum, you are welcome to come. You need to send an email to bob@cctaxpayers.com. Now, in addition to running for alderman, Manny is a school teacher in a local private school. We're not going to mention the school. And you teach social studies, am I correct? I would like to ask you a little bit about, do you get to choose your curriculum and what you teach, if you could address that a little bit.
Well, thanks for having me on here. Being able to choose the curriculum, the answer is both yes and no, at least at the school we're at. I have the privilege of, they give me a curriculum, and it's based off of what comes from a couple of different schools. I've seen schools in our area use stuff from Abeka, which is a very popular homeschooling curriculum, as well as Bob Jones Press. They have their own very popular curriculum that's used by some. Classical Conversations, another great curriculum that's used by many people. But our school will pick one of those out, give it to the students and to the teachers. Teachers get the teachers' editions, and we prepare our lessons from there. But we are given a lot of leeway in being able to craft those lessons into what they need to be for the students, not just sticking to what's in the book, but going beyond the book. Hey, let's go dive deeper into this subject. Let's go deeper into this one topic here. If we have a student who's particularly fascinated with George Washington, then we'll spend a little bit more time on George Washington. It gives us that flexibility rather than, oh, well, today's modular is this, and we have to do this, and we can only stick to this. It allows you to have that flexibility. When the student's not struggling with something, it gives you some flexibility to stop. Okay, you don't understand this concept. Let's break it down a little bit more, and it lets you a lot more hands-on.
Now, what grade are you teaching?
So I have the honor and privilege of doing everything from 9th grade through 12th grade through my classes. I have a 9th grade history class, but I have an elective which mixes in all of the high school, as well as our senior-level government, politics, and economics classes.
And I know you were teaching the Constitution at one point.
Yeah, actually, we were doing it just this morning. So the day we're recording this is Constitution Day.
I was going to say, we're recording on Constitution.
So we had our friends from the Daughters of the American Revolution stop by and drop off some presents for the kids. So our 9th graders were able to have their first copy of the Constitution for themselves. So they were all able to get through them. We walked through how the Constitution works. What were the big debates going on? Today, we really emphasized the presidency, because presidents are taking more and more of a role, both in our world and even in American history, as we transition to the Jefferson administration, is what we're going into this next little bit after we get through Washington. We want to make sure they understand, what can a president do? So we had them run through, and we even had a presidential election in our classroom, so all the kids are running around negotiating who gets what vote, oh, who's going to be my vice president. But you make it hands-on for them.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. It's good to know that that is being taught.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to ask you some questions now about Ward 5.
Go
what
for
do
it.
You see as the main issue you would like to address in Ward 5?
The single biggest issue I believe Ward 5 is really facing is just a lack of leadership. We haven't had good connectivity, communication, or responsiveness from our leadership. It is a struggle for many people to even know who their leadership is to begin with. That's something I believe more people should be knowledgeable of, not just from an educational standpoint, but it does take some responsibility on the person holding that seat. You're here to serve the people and they don't know who you are. You're living amongst them and they don't know who you are. You go into a monthly meeting, if not bi-weekly meeting, and they don't know who you are. So the big thing would be making sure people in our area, in our community, know who our person is and are able to communicate with them. That's the number one issue for me.
Feedback.
Being able to feedback, yeah.
Feedback.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Why did you decide to run?
Why did I choose to run? I will say it wasn't something I chose. It was a lot more of a calling. I was hesitant when I was sitting in the office filling out the paperwork to officially run. I was like, I'm not sure I really want to do this. Is this really? And just talking over with a couple of people, even some of the people here at this table as we're recording, I talked to them one-on-one saying, hey, I'm probably going to end up running. Here's what I'm thinking of. What are your thoughts? How can I get your feedback on this before I jump into this massive world of actually being the person on the front of the ticket rather than being the person behind the scenes helping out? But at the end of the day, one of the big reasons, quite frankly, was we were driving around Duffy Field, me and my mother. We had spent some time downtown, and we were driving through there. And I looked at her and said, no one speaks for these people. No one represents these people. No one's willing to fight for them. And both me and my mother understand that at a very deep level, because coming from a community which does not speak English, not being able to be heard is something that you experience daily. And it requires a lot of work to overcome. Both of my parents learned to overcome that and learned English and were able to become American citizens. But being a voice for those who cannot have a voice is priceless and something I would be honored to be able to do.
One of the things that you bring to this campaign that I love is your youth. You're a recent college graduate,
mm-hmm.
and your degree is in...
History and political studies.
Wow.
Yes.
Not a surprise that you're teaching history.
No.
What do you see as is needed on the board of aldermen that you would bring?
I think we need a fresh new look. We have a lot of people with a lot of experience who have this knowledge of how things have worked in the past. And as we try attracting more youth to our city, which is a freaking conversation at forums, we'll hear, we need to bring in more young people. We need to bring more young people. We need to get something for the young people. Wouldn't it be good to have someone who is in part of that youth, who spends time with the youth, being able to communicate to the board, hey, the youth need this. The youth want this. Here's what's going on in that younger demographic. If we want that, we need to have that for them. That's one. And then two, Ward 5 is a majority-minority district. And having someone who comes from an immigrant background, from a minority background, I think will be able to be useful to it. So if elected, I would be the first Hispanic to ever sit in that position. And we have a large Spanish-speaking population. We have a large Asian-American population. We have a large Black-American population that together make up the majority of Ward 5. And making sure we have someone from those communities who can speak to those communities will allow us to really help out those communities.
Do you still speak Spanish?
Mi primera lengua, yo hablo perfectamente. Matter of fact, I actually teach Spanish at the school as well.
Yes.
So I teach Spanish there at the school as well. So
sometimes the kids that grow up in immigrant households don't, their parents don't want them to learn their home language because they want them to be American.
Yes. I've heard both sides of that coin. Honestly, it comes down to a parental decision, whatever you think is best for your family. I've seen both sides work out pretty well.
Yeah.
Now, I know we have a bond issue regarding Marietta Park, and that's in your district, is it not?
It is.
Could you talk about that a little bit?
So Martin Marietta Park, for those who may not be aware, used to be, from what I understand, was a quarry or some sort of mine run by Martin Marietta, which was donated, not sold, but donated to the city of New Bern. Our now mayor was able to get that deal through. He was able to get it owned by the city. And thanks to his great efforts there, we were able to transform it into a park. And there has been a fantastic vision laid out for what that park can be. Amphitheaters, zip lines, kids areas, a lot of really wonderful things could be done in that park with the massive amount of land we have. It just comes down to, do we have leadership who's willing to fund it and push for it? And that's what we've been lacking in Ward 5. And something I would like to champion, should the voters vote in favor of that bond referendum, is pushing that through.
And I think one of the things that I originally saw when the Martin Marietta did donate it to the town, and here now, is some people are saying, well, how come it's not a complete park already? I mean, just because the land is donated to you doesn't mean that all of the accessories that go with
it. It would have been lovely if it would have been free, so you could have gotten it all done at once, but.
Well, I was curious. I think what they're doing with the parks is good, but every time I drive past Craven County Fairgrounds, I'm wondering what the heck's going on there. I mean, why are they letting it deteriorate so badly?
As far as I know, that's either still in receivership. I know it's not being they're not paying the taxes on it, so I don't know who owns it.
That's a county problem. You're talking to a city guy.
Yeah, that does come up a lot, where sadly there are things we want to fix, there's things we want to do, but there's the jurisdiction debate over who has jurisdiction over this, county, city, even federal at times.
I was amazed to find out that roads are either owned by the city or by the state or private roads. There's nothing that's owned by the county. Mm-hmm. So I know one of the other bond issues is to keep the roads up to snuff.
Paving a lot of stuff, yes, sir.
That'd be a full-time job based on the roads I drive on.
Exactly.
You don't have a road in front of your house.
Well,
a paved road.
Well, I live on a dirt road.
Yeah, and Elvis sang the song about living on a gravel road. Okay.
True love travels on a gravel road.
Okay. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Calls.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said East 70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at East 70 Pond, slam bam full of firearms, new guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at East 70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If East 70 Pond doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, East 70 Pond will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than East 70 Pond. Of course, East 70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. East 70 Pond, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to the sponsors and supporters. Alan, you wanted to make a comment?
Yeah, just a couple things came to mind, Manny, when you were talking. First of all, congratulations for running. I think more people should who care about the country should do what you're doing, care about the future of the people. Just two things. The first thing is I've found in my experience that a lot of politicians make the mistake of not finding out what their constituents want. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether they fail to do it because they don't want to know, this way they can do what they want, or whether they're just too lazy, whatever. But I would certainly recommend, and I hope you do get elected, that you would take surveys of your constituents, get something, you know, in writing. Let that be complicated. Just make sure that your constituents know that you are concerned about what they want.
Who pays for the survey?
Campaign finance, we could send something through there. But I have a solution to this that will actually be free to everyone involved. It's something I actually started talking about back in January when I announced, which was alderman office hours. I will be at some public space available for people to swing by and just talk to me. Hey, this is going on in my neighborhood. Hey, what do you know about this issue? Hey, can you help me out with this resource? Just like I do for any of my students, I say, hey, come up to me during your study hall, during your lunch period, during a free hour you have. Come ask me for help. Let's offer that same thing to the people of New Bern and be able to say, hey, if you need help, if you need some sort of resource, I'll be here at this location at this time on this date. Come see me. And since I've made that announcement back in January, we've had, I believe, 6 other candidates sign on to that pledge. I mean, it's catching on. Why? Because people, first of all, want leadership. And two, they want people who will be responsive and talk to them.
Yeah, and you're talking about funding surveys. It could be funded by the city. I mean, we need to find out from the people what they want. The second thing I would just want to comment on was about the reality of people coming into this country who do not speak English. And I really think that a person like yourself could really reinforce the idea of their commitment to assimilating into our culture, to becoming Americans, to becoming patriots.
Yes.
And because that's the problem. That's the problem with all this immigration. It's not the people coming over. It's the fact that we have some subgroups that don't want to assimilate. They want to stay off to themselves. And that's really detrimental to the country.
Moving beyond just the issue of immigration, but we have so many people in our community who are learning English thanks to the people here in New Bern who give them resources, like the Literary Center. That's a great center where my mother learned English. It was volunteers saying, hey, let's teach you English, make you part of what America is.
It's great.
It's not just show up and boom, you become an American. No, there's this wonderful experience of truly becoming part of this nation.
Yeah, that's great.
I have one question for you, Manny. I saw a video on Facebook yesterday that indicated that your incumbent doesn't feel like she has to show up for meetings. I don't know what her attendance is or has been in the past year because I don't attend those meetings. However, I would ask you for your constituents, will you show up?
Yes, so I fully plan on being into as many meetings as I physically can be. Unless something is physically barring me from being at the meetings, I will do my absolute best to be there. Ms. Barbara Best is struggling in that area, absolutely. She has missed 5 meetings in the last couple of years, including multiple meetings that would have basically allowed stuff to go through, very important meetings. And due to her absence, no meeting could be held due to lack of quorum.
And that would include representation of District 6.
A lot of other issues like that, yes. But it bogs down the process because we couldn't get ahead. She's additionally serves on the Redistricting Commission, the Redevelopment Commission, and has not attended a single meeting in her 8 years of office. Despite serving on that board, at least in the last 4 years, which I have records for, she has not attended a single meeting.
Doesn't sound like she's interested. Do you guys get paid for being an alderman?
We do, and I am rather happy that it's a very low sum because it shouldn't be a full-time job as alderman. Some other positions might deserve something like that, like a city manager. Makes sense since he's doing it day-to-day.
Right.
But for an alderman where you're coming in maybe twice, maybe 3 times a month.
How about if you're being paid and you never come in?
Very true. Yeah. Very true. Ms. Best has asked for a 30% raise to the alderman's salary. Just a couple months ago, they tried raising it to be equal to the county commissioners. I don't want a raise. I don't think we deserve a raise. I think the number where we're at, which is right about $12,000 a year for a regular alderman, I think it's a little bit above, a little bit lower than that. But I think that's a perfectly good amount for the effort we're putting in on average. Our mayor, who does more, gets a little bit more. Our mayor pro tem, who does more, gets a little more. But on average, I think 12K is a good number to be at.
You know, Manny, going back to your involvement with the school again, and I heard you mention the curriculums, the curriculums that are available, and I know you made it available to teachers and students and whatever else, but the amazing thing, making it available to parents.
Yes.
Because we were in the situation a number of years ago when Common Core was there, and okay, we're going to put in Common Core, but you're not allowed to know what's in it. And that was the way that it was presented to us. We attended more meetings in the legislature than many of the legislators did about Common Core, and you were not allowed to know what was there.
At least at our school, which I have the privilege of really working there, it really is a joy to be able to teach these kids. But the books are readily available to any parent who wants them. As far as I know, and I have talked to multiple parents and helping out their students, is they are able to get their textbooks, not just the physical copies, which each student has a physical copy of their textbook, but they have digital copies available on the cloud, which parents can log in and be able to see the textbooks and be able to get the resources they need from there as well. There are study guides we tend to put up. Google Classroom is a great resource that I've been using and abusing, being able to upload all these documents, all my PowerPoint slides. So they're able to see all of my PowerPoint slides, all the notes for the class saved on there. So any parent can log in, see exactly what I'm teaching that day, which is, oh, today we're doing the American Revolution. All right, the government's class is moving on to foreign policy. Oh, now this class is going over Immanuel Kant and his philosophy. They're able to see everything I'm teaching for that day.
That's awesome.
I remember when the Air Force discovered PowerPoint. Death by PowerPoint.
That's how some of my students feel sometimes when they're taking notes. It's like, oh my goodness, there's another slide to the PowerPoint.
Another PowerPoint, oh boy.
And working for a government contractor, abuse of PowerPoint, how to make your audience go to sleep. Yeah.
Oh, yes. You have to make the graphics fun for the kids, you know, have a couple jokes in there, you know.
Do we know where we want to go?
I want to talk about the Federal Reserve board meeting today to consider cutting interest rates.
Which they did.
We won't know the answer right
now. Yes, we already know the answer.
It came out at 1:30. It was
a
25.
A quarter point
cut.
Yeah, I read yeah. this morning that if it's cut, that mortgage rates will fall to a new low. And then I looked at the new low, and it was 5 point something. My mortgage rate's 2.25.
Yeah,
so
under
it's
three.
Fallen to double my mortgage rate. And I've been getting a lot of calls recently from people asking me if I want to sell my house. And I just tell them, I have a 2.25 mortgage rate. I'm not going anywhere.
That's
Don't
right.
call me anymore.
The news that I have is the Federal Reserve cut its benchmark interest rate Wednesday for the first time since December and signaled more cuts are likely this year. We don't have a lot of space left this year, but
how did Lisa Cook vote? Anybody know?
I don't think those are public record, but we don't have time to jump into the entire history of this. But for anyone who wants to know where we're headed, go research Japan in the 1990s, what they did as a federal bank. It is becoming eerily similar to what our federal bank is doing right now. If you watch what Japan did in the 1990s,
that was when they died.
Yes, the financial stagnation of Japan.
They choked.
I hope I'm wrong. I pray I'm wrong. I'm a bit of a pessimist at times, but I hope I'm wrong and this all works out for the better.
They're well, talking about two more cuts coming this year.
But only one next year and then one the following year. But I did want to respond that, you know, these are short-term rates. These are overnight lending rates, which right. do they impact long-term mortgage rates? Maybe somewhat, but it's a whole different vehicle. So there's maybe a correlation, but it's not close.
Well, speaking of the short-term lending, if he keeps interest rates up, we're paying more interest on the short-term money that we're borrowing to pay our national debt. So Mr. Powell is sticking a spoke in Trump's wheel because he needs to get the debt down.
And the last administration went to short-term rates because they were cheaper
at that
for
time.
Their period of time, knowing it was going to be a challenge for the next administration.
So. Yeah, and we're refinancing our debt at whatever this rate is.
Yeah, so I agree.
It's my understanding that the mortgage rates have more to do with government debt and long-term circumstances, like you mentioned, Glenn, than it yeah. does the short-term interest rate. It's yeah. moving in the right direction. Trump's been asking for this and wanting more, and I can understand why he does. But mortgage rates, you're talking about 2.5%. I remember back in the 70s, the mortgage rates were 7%, 7.5% was considered good. The mortgage rates were up to 12%.
Our first mortgage was 19%.
So, you know, people who look at that say, well, 7%, extremely high.
When I worked in Cambridge, Massachusetts, we were building a new building, and we were really, really good to get a mortgage at 3.5 points over prime, which went to 18%. So our mortgage was 21.5%. And you sure you need that eraser on your pencil?
Yeah.
You
know? ours was in 1981, and we did everything we could possibly do to do it wrong. We did an FHA loan, and it was a variable rate, and it was consistent for the first 6 months, and then it changed every month to whatever the current rate was, and we didn't want to get behind, so we kept paying it. And then we refinanced when the rates came down. We did the whole thing wrong.
My first one wrong, too, so
yeah.
Live and learn.
You know, we're in competition, of course, with student loan rates right now. Still in competition because the government has decided they're going to guarantee or they're going to be the only source of a student loan rate.
Well, that happened during Obama.
Yeah,
it did. And that was a big mistake.
Yes.
Well, has anything happened with that loan forgiveness?
It's not in effect anymore.
So people whose loans were forgiven, do they owe them now?
No. Once forgiven, forgiven.
Well, that's not fair.
Well, wait a second. Based on my faith, I'm thumbs up.
Yes.
Once forgiven,
sadly,
always forgiven.
The financial world does not follow the rules of salvation.
I realize what I say as I said it. Yes, only for Christian borrowers.
Yeah. I love that.
Okay, folks, we have less than a minute to go. What do we want
to
close out?
I'm going to mention that some of is this the end of the show?
This is the end of the show.
Early voting
has started.
It will start on the 18th, and it's available at the Stanley White Center
from 8 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. The last Saturday, right before Election Day, is also available for early voting. And then Election Day is October 7th. Go and vote. Make your voice heard. Even if you don't vote for me, and I won't take that personally. Don't worry. But just make sure you have your vote cast for the bond referendum, the mayor, and your alderman.
And on October 7th, you will be voting in your normal precinct.
Yes.
Just that one day, you go to your normal precinct. And this is only for city residents of New Bern, mm-hmm. not somebody that has a New Bern address, but city residents. Folks, we're at the end of the show. Thanks for listening. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.